This is Rocco Sansone from ReviewFix.com, and I'm standing here with the author of The Only Living Boy, David Gallagher.
Hi, how are you?
So, tell us about The Only Living Boy.
So, The Only Living Boy is the story of a 12-year-old boy named Eric who runs away from home and finds himself lost alone in a patchwork alien world where there's mermaid warriors, insect princesses, dragons, mad scientists, flying insect cities, underground dwellings. We kind of describe it as like the island of Dr. Moreau meets the Jungle Book.
How'd you come up with this?
So I used to work for the New York City Police Department. And during that time, I was coming back from a NYPD thing, and I was walking through the set of I Am Legend, the Will Smith movie. One of the things that I noticed in being on the set was that Will Smith's like this kind of badass dude. He's like 40-year-old badass, like a lifelong years of experience that he can kind of call upon to beat all these various ne'er-do-wells. But if I were a vampire, I'd be scared of him, because I've seen Will Smith movies. I know how badass he is. Mm-hmm. But what I wouldn't be scared of if I were this crazy, evil, nefarious beast is a 12-year-old, you know, white kid who had no skills, who had no background, who had no sense of himself or his purpose or any sort of direction, no memories, no skills, no life experiences. So as I was thinking about this, and it's sort of incubating in my brain, Paul Simon's The Only Living Boy in New York came on my iPod, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, there's synchronicity here. So I sort of took all those experiences, like just that super high concept, Only Living Boy in New York. I mean, it's sort of there. But then beyond the title, I really worked backwards and thought about what would make it interesting for me. What kind of stories did I like as a kid growing up? And I thought about The Black Cauldron and Bridge to Terabithia, and I thought about, you know, Lord of the Rings, and I thought about even modern fiction like The Fault in Our Stars, and put all that together in my head and thought about, you know, what would make a really great, compelling comic story in the tradition of children's narratives and pulps.
How was the writing process on this?
Well, the writing process is, you know, I wake up at 4 in the morning, and I write until about 9, and then I do, like, other stuff. But I wake up really early, and I like the sense of accomplishment that comes from waking up early and being up before my editors wake up, mm-hmm. And before my agent, my publicist, wake up. but what happens is, you know, I write it, and then I'll shoot it off to my artist and co-collaborator, Steve Ellis, who helped come up with a lot of the visuals that you see in the story. We'll bounce those script ideas back and forth until we come up with something that's really concrete and concretized. But there's a lot of collaboration working with Steve. He's really great. We've worked previously on High Moon and Box 13 and Deadlands for Image Comics. So, you know, we have a really great working relationship. So it's a really collaborative writing process. You know, even though I do a lot of the heavy lifting with the scripting, he does, you know, we do a lot of the collaborative storytelling.
Was that Stevie's first choice, or was it really hard to find an artist?
No, Steve was my first choice. I mean, like, when I had the idea, I brought it immediately to him, because we were already working on Box 13 and High Moon and I think Darkstone and Winter Guard for Marvel. So we already had a really great working relationship, so, I mean, he was the natural fit. Especially, I don't think there's anyone who draws dragons better than Steve. He has a tradition of working for Dungeons and Dragons, so he had this sort of is in his wheelhouse.
So he worked for, like, Wizards of the Coast, right?
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast and White Wolf and Warcraft, so this was just the perfect fit for him.
Who would you say is the target audience for this?
You know, I call it young adult, but other people call it crossover, or middle ages. But, you know, I think if you're anywhere between 7 to, like, 70 is really sort of the ideal fit for this.
So how has the overall reaction to this comic been?
Oh, well, you know, it's really interesting because we started as a Kickstarter years ago, and it was massively successful on Kickstarter. Then we brought it, we made it available on platforms like Noise Trade and Topastic and Tumblr, and Humble Bundle and Comixology, and it's just been overwhelming. You know, it was the top downloaded comic on Comixology. It was the top downloaded comic on Noise Trade. It's, you know, so it's definitely been really successful, and the outpouring and the outreach has just been just overwhelming. So we're really happy that our fans are so passionate about the series.
Tell us about when Paper Cuts picked it up.
Oh, so Paper Cuts picked up the book last year, and it was really, I think, a perfect fit for us because Paper Cuts has such a keen eye for distribution and libraries and book publishing. So it made perfect sense to be partnering with somebody with such a collaborative, broad, future-minded idea of what publishing could be.
Do you have any advice for any like comic book writers and artists?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest advice that I have and I've been giving recently for comic book artists is that and writers is that you want to get to a position where you're so good that people can't ignore you, which and that I mean it's so be in a position where you're so good that people can't. Be in a position where you're so good that people can't ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is constantly work on your craft, constantly hunger, constantly feed yourself. You know, not just with, like, food, but feed yourself with lots of different experiences. Go to museums, go to, you know, ballet recitals, go see Hamilton, go see Lion King, go to the park, go to Zimbabwe, just constantly feed yourself new experiences, and those new experiences are going to be the experiences that you can draw on to be a better artist, to be a better writer. Constantly write every day, journal, talk about, you know, and communicate with comics as a language. And I think that ultimately you'll reach that state where you're that good, and then we can talk about, you know, getting your work published somewhere.
Do you have any inspiration from any comics, comic book writers, anyone like that?
Do I have inspirations? Yeah, I mean, I'm inspired by people like Will Eisner. Certainly inspired by, beyond Will Eisner, people like Walt Simonson, who's a huge inspiration. And then beyond Walt Simonson, people like Tom Waits, Leonard Cohen, and William Faulkner is a huge inspiration, Lloyd Alexander. I was raised on old-time radio serials more than I was on comic books, so I looked to things like Flash Gordon and Gunsmoke and Jack Benny and Jack Parr and Abbott and Costello. That's really sort of where I lean heavily.
So I would just say those inspirations help your writing as to like actual like comic writers.
Those inspiration, like that's inspiration to me. It's like listening to things that like. This is going to sound weird. If you want to be a really great comic writer, stop reading comics. That sounds weird. That's really weird advice. But what I mean is, like, read other things. Submerge yourself in things that aren't comics. I think you'll find a lot of inspiration. I mean, one of Brian Michael Bendis' biggest influences isn't other comic creators. It's Dave Mamet. You know, and that there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot to be said for looking for inspiration, deeper inspiration beyond just comics.
You have a workshop going on in the next couple of weeks. How's that going, and how did this come about?
Oh, I have a workshop coming up in the next couple of minutes. Not just the next couple of weeks. But what we really wanted to do when we were creating... What we really wanted to do when we were creating these workshops was give children the opportunities that we didn't necessarily have growing up. When I was a kid, there weren't a lot of comic writers who came to my school to teach me how to make comics. There weren't a lot of opportunities to really get engaged in understanding how comics are made or what the process is behind them. But as we move to becoming a much more visual society, we're surrounded by things that are essentially comics, advertising, emojis on our phone, you know, apps. All these things play a vital role in creating in a visual language, and so that's what we want to do. Is we want to facilitate that.
Would you recommend Kickstarter for all upcoming comic book writers and artists?
I think Kickstarter is a really great opportunity for people to build their audience and grow and become better. let me start over. I think Kickstarter is a really great opportunity to find your audience. I think it's a really great opportunity to engage your audience. And I think that it's a really great opportunity to give creators the resources that might not be available to them. I think it certainly lowers the barrier to entry for a lot of people to get their work out there.
Would you like to add anything else?
I think that is it. You know, I hope people pick up the book and come to really enjoy it.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
You too, Rocco. Thank you.